It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It is the best time of year to reflect on music. All the albums and artists who made an impression on you in 2022, the breakout artists, the superstars you couldn't stop listening to. Join in on the year in music, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson join us from NPR Music. Ann is a critic and correspondent. And welcome back to the Ideas Network.
So excited to be here.
Awesome. And Stephen is a host, writer, and reviewer, and a Wisconsin native. I have to put that in there. Stephen, welcome back.
It is such a pleasure to be here with my great pal, Anne.
Awesome. Well, let's get this started by just some reflections and initial thoughts. And Anne, you first, what did this year in music signify to you?
Well, as far as making my own list, first I have to stop myself and say my mother's family is also from Wisconsin. So I have ancestral roots. Shout out to Appleton and Bear Creek and all the towns where my cousins live. I mean, for me personally, I tried to relax into listening this year and really just go with my gut, I guess, to use a cliche, rather than overthinking when I was making my year-end lists. And what I found, some of the themes I found that emerged as I was making those lists were incredible eclecticism, a global sense of what pop could be. And maybe because of that, themes like migration, dislocation, those themes really emerged in the records that I loved, and just kind of like trying to find your own personal empowerment amidst a lot of change and a lot of risk and, you know, even terror in the world. So those are some things that I hit on when I was listening to music this year.
Stephen, what notes, you know, what hit on you as you listened to music this year?
Well, I think a lot of themes of liberation really came through in a lot of the music that I loved. It came through in a lot of the pop sounds, but also in a lot of music that kind of smashed genres together in really exciting and inventive ways. Like when I looked at the NPR Music's list of the top 50 albums, it was amazing, like kind of looking at the top, how many of those top records, you know, were this, but also this. Jazz, but also funk and soul, you know, pop, but also R&B and hip hop, a lot of music that was really, really casting about beyond genre silos, I guess, for lack of a better word. And so a lot of the music that I really loved and really tapped into had this freeing quality to it. Was not only signified liberation in kind of a sonic sense, but also lyrically and thematically. Those were a lot of the records I really kept coming back to.
Well, let's get some music in here. NPR named the hit FNF Let's Go the best song of 2022. This is Glorilla, and relatively unknown before catapulting to success.
Oh, I'm built R-E-E-E-E-free. That means I ain't got to worry about no cheat. And I'm S-I-N-G-L-E again. Y'all by hanging out the window with my wretched friends. I'm F-R-E-E-E-E-E.
Okay, so Stephen, what made this song a breakout success?
Well, I think, you know, part of it speaks to the process at NPR Music. You know, we've got a huge team across a lot of, that cover a lot of different genres, a lot of different sounds. And we just cast a simple vote at the beginning of the process. You know, what was your favorite song? What was your favorite album?
And how this, democratic of you.
Very democratic. But one of the things I love about it is that it's bringing in voices that we're not necessarily talking to on a day-to-day basis. It's a big team. We have member stations all over the place. We have shows that we talk to. And this track just came up again and again as just kind of as popping off and just being a lot of people's favorites. And sometimes it's just as simple as mere democracy, but you kind of heard a sense of the joy and the verve and the chaos just in that little clip that you played.
And, you know, does this showcase a Memphis sound, as Glorilla and the producer Hit Kid hail from Memphis?
Yeah, I'm from Tennessee, and I'm very excited to see Memphis I live in Tennessee. I'm not from there originally, but I'm very excited to see Memphis at the top of the heap here. There is such a rich history of hip hop in Memphis and music in Memphis in general. And I think, you know, one of the signature trends of the past few years has been not only women rappers claiming their space in the game, but women rappers from all over the South. You know, you have Megan Thee Stallion from Texas, you have City Girls from Florida, you have, you know, Latto from, I think from Atlanta, I could be wrong about that. Sorry, Latto, if I'm wrong, the, you know, but from all over the place. And nice to see Memphis out of the box. Also, I will just say, I think the song of the year often does emerge from nowhere because it has to grab ears. Mm-hmm. And this is a song that grabbed ears on the radio and in the streets, not only via the much vaunted streaming services and on TikTok, you know, so it's multi-platform.
Mm-hmm. TikTok. That's catapulting. Right. Talking about the best music of 2022 with NPR Music's Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson at our side. You can join in with the music that you love this year, 800-642-1234. Okay, it's time for Beyonce, the latest. without further ado, Renaissance is NPR's best album of the year, and NPR named the track Alien Superstar as the second best song of the year. Too classy for this world. Forever I'm that girl. Beat you diamonds and pearl. Ooh, baby, I'm too classy to be touched. I paint them all in dust. I'm stingy with my love. Ooh, baby, so, Anne, what stands out to you on Beyonce's work here?
Well, this song, you know, of course, is part of a bigger fresco or tapestry or whatever metaphor you want to use for it, of Renaissance, which I compared to the Sistine Chapel, much to the horror of some people out there on social media. But hey, it is Renaissance, so I think my comparison is valid. I mean, it's Beyonce paying tribute to club music, especially to the Black queer pioneers of club music. So on this track, for example, Alien Superstar, co-produced by Honey Dijon, who's this longtime champion of Chicago house music, in particular, well, a lot of your listeners probably know about it. It's originated just down the road from you, you know, powerful club music that's so important in the sound of pop today. And it's really, Beyonce always, you know, she offers us a work that has so many details that we can take from so many perspectives. And on this, you know, she just like tells this history, finds her own place in it, while getting us moving. And that's what we love, you know? Let's have fun while we learn about our roots.
Stephen, will Beyonce win a Grammy for Album of the Year?
Boy, I've been living with this debate already for quite a while because it really does seem like everything is coalescing around this record. This was a commercial hit. It was a huge critical hit. It really kind of permeated the culture in ways that her last couple of records did too. But it does feel like there's a little bit of a conversation around it's time for the Grammys to give her that Album of the Year, to give her that Record of the Year. She's won a ton of Grammys, but never kind of those big prizes. And this record, you said Album of the Year. I mean, it is a very, very complete collection of songs. I know I keep harping on the process that NPR Music used to pick some of this stuff. When we had all those different people submitting their favorite songs of the year, there were something like 11 tracks from this out of 16 from this Beyonce record that was making our list when we were just looking at the raw numbers. And so this whole record really captured people, the way that the songs flow into each other. The fact that this song still jumped out as a highlight really says something.
Anne, go ahead.
Oh,
yes.
Can I say one thing to that? Because I think this is one of the stories of the year that nobody's really written about yet, which is that not only the Beyonce record, but several of the biggest albums of the year, when you look at people's song lists of the year, not just us, but other publications, websites, you know, the big Up Rocks critic poll, you will notice that different songs from the same albums, Bad Bunny is another one, his album, made the list. And I think that's an attribute of the streaming age, because people do single out songs, but they single out different songs on the same album. So singles are alive, but in a different way than they used to be.
And I wonder how that gets at, and you've written about how it sounds and feels different depending on your perspective and the mood you're in. And I thought that was really interesting on how you framed that.
Sorry, I'm drinking a little coffee. it's the morning. Definitely on the, I mean, Beyonce does that deliberately. She's such a choreographer, you know, a sonic choreographer, and she really provides so many different ways to move on this record, or think about movement, think about dance. But I think that's true with many of the top albums of the year. I don't know. I'd be curious to see what Stephen thinks, but the Bad Bunny record again, or Rosalia's record, which is called Motomami, and which is really almost divided into the Moto songs, the dance songs, and the Mommy songs, the ballads, you know, the more tender introspective songs. I feel like that is true across the board. Artists are trying to provide different experiences so that listeners can join them when whatever kind of mood they're in.
We're reflecting back on 2022 with NPR Music's Brain Trust, Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson. Join in by calling with your questions or your favorite music of the year and why it moved you. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the year draws to a close, we explore the music that has moved us, the albums, the artists, the musicians you found, and ones you went back to. Call in about the music you want to pay tribute to. Your favorite band that dropped a new album, 800-642-1234. NPR Music's Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson stay with us. You've surfaced Bad Bunny, so we're going to go there next. Puerto Rican superstar Bad Bunny in May released the critically acclaimed record Un Verano Sin Ti. It is NPR Music's second best album of the year, and here's a little bit of El Apagón.
Tierra de Maelo y Teo Calderón y de Barea, el que fue campeón. Primero Calderón. Maldita sea, otro apagón. Vamos pa' los bleachers a prender un blon. Antes que a Pipo le dé un bofetón. Puerto Rico está en cabrón. Hey, estoy en cabrón. Puerto Rico está en cabrón.
So, Stephen, how does this Bad Bunny song convey the constant struggles Puerto Ricans have with the power outages and the political corruption?
Well, yeah, I mean, he definitely lyrically addresses a lot of themes around Puerto Rico, but also manages to package it in a really celebratory and kind of genre-spanning way. I mean, one thing that really jumps out at me about this whole record is just how packed it is with hits. You know, Bad Bunny is one of the biggest stars in the world, and he released an album that sounds like a career-spanning greatest hits collection. It's 23 songs long, which is a theme that we're kind of coming back to on a couple of these records. Several of these records are really supersized, but don't have a lot of filler to them. So, you know, in some cases, we were sort of overrun by the quality of some of these records, and this record really jumps out in that regard. As you said, it's really lyrically strong. I highly recommend, if you don't speak Spanish, read the read translations of these lyrics to find out that these aren't just songs that sound great. They're songs that have depth to them as well.
And you know, Bad Bunny has been vocal about politics before.
Yes.
What is his role, and what is a musician's role in this type of call to action, you know, to get political?
I was recently talking with Ana Maria Serra, our co-host of Alt Latino, about Bad Bunny, and she was pointing out, you know, that he's kind of the perfect pop star for our time, because he does have this kind of multifaceted persona and approach to interfacing with the public. You know, he is your classic heartbreaker, you know, just there for fun, making party anthems. But then he's very gender fluid in his presentation, for example. He does take on politics. He stands for Puerto Rico. You mentioned El Apagón, which is a song that talks about his love for Puerto Rico. And he made, I think it's a 25-minute documentary about power outages in Puerto Rico and how the U.S. isn't addressing what Puerto Rico needs adequately. So, you know, in some ways, he reminds me of someone like, I'm going to say this, is people might be shocked by this, but almost like Madonna in the early 90s, who, you know, was a massive pop star, but then taking on political causes like the AIDS epidemic and the government's inadequate response to it, because they understand that this is what they need to do to rise to the occasion of the role. And I think Bad Bunny is really doing that. And one more thing I'll say is that there's been a lot of talk among certain circles, maybe, that everything is so fragmented and that there is no mass culture anymore. There is, no, you know, there's no monoculture. Bad Bunny sold out two nights at Yankee Stadium recently. This is the monoculture. This is mass culture. And I mean, it's just not necessarily in English. So I think this is really a wave of the future.
And you mentioned reading the some of the lyrics in English, and something that, and I just want to read a line or two. I don't want to leave. They take what belongs to me. This is my beach. This is my sun. This is my land. This is me. And so it's a really, you know, talking about rich people going to Puerto Rico and taking what is not theirs.
Right. Cast the white lotus in a different light, doesn't it? White Lotus, Puerto Rico. It's coming.
We're revisiting the best music of 2022, our guides, Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson at NPR. You can join in 800-642-1234. Now it is time for Rosalía. Third album, Motomami, NPR Music's third best album of the year. And here is a track from that. Let's see, we're going to play Saoko.
Saoko, papi, Saoko. Saoko, papi, Saoko. Cuando pone perla en el collar de tu piel, diferente ya no son perla uno. Cuando los cubitos de hielo ya no se guarda hielo, se congela uno. Cuando te noche en el cielo y se vuelve de día, ya todo eso cambió. Cuando el caballo entra a Troya, tú te confías de ardió.
So, Ann, you were on NPR's All Songs Considered on a panel discussing albums of the year. Motomami was described as visionary. What do you see in it?
Well, I mean, Rosalía is truly just one of the most interesting composers working in pop. I'm going to call her a composer because what she's doing is putting together sounds from all over the world, from all over the Latin world, including Afro-Latin styles like dembo, sounds like bachata. Now, I'm not an expert in this music, but the fusion that she offers us, like, it goes to a place that is only hers. And I think that's what she accomplishes on this record. And that's the task she set out for herself after her last incredible record, El Mal Querer. This record doesn't have an overarching, obvious lyrical theme. But to me, the theme is, I am going to invent my sound. I am an adventurer, and I'm going to make something of my wandering through the sonic world. And she does that so beautifully on this record.
I was really struck by, she did this fabulous Jimmy Fallon interview where she's like, you know, it's Motomami, it's Motopapi, it's the way you feel, you know. What is that energy that hits you, Stephen?
Well, I mean, I think Ann really touched on it well in terms of, yeah, there, you know, there are these lyrical themes and you can kind of grasp onto them, but this record really is best heard under the best set of headphones you can find, with the best sound quality you can find. We listen to so many of these records like in our cars or on these kind of cheap earbuds. This record has so much sonic depth to it and so much inventiveness in the sounds that are kind of springing out of every corner of the mix. It's really hard to just like to just pick out 15 seconds of this album to play, because she's just jumping off in so many different directions sonically. She's really presiding over something that is enormously inventive.
And more from her, from Rosalía, in the future, do you imagine?
Oh, completely. I mean, she is one of our major stars. You know, she talking about someone who could fill the shoes of David Bowie, possibly, you know, I mean, she's that inventive, that self-aware, and that able to adapt. I think another artist she often makes me think about is Bjork. When Bjork started out, she similarly worked on, you know, was on the dance floor collaborating with Nelly Hooper and creating dance floor hits, and she's gone through so many changes. I could see Rosalía having a career like that.
NPR Music's Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson are guides to the music of the year. We're in the heart of the best of list making season. Join in on what music topped your list this year. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We pay tribute to the music of 2022 and the year it was for musicians and their bands. Call in about the music that helped you escape or unwind, that soothed you or, you know, just made you dance. 800-642-1234. Send along your best music of 2022 and email ideas at WPR.org. We have NPR Music's Ann Powers, a critic and correspondent, and Stephen Thompson here, host, writer, and reviewer for NPR Music. So without further ado, let's make way for Lizzo, global superstar. released her first album since 2019.
Make way for Steven. Steven yeah. Thompson.
A little bird told me that you will be following. This is the new album's hit song, About Damn Time. Steven, go.
Okay, so you know, the idea of synesthesia, where like your senses kind of are combined, and so you hear music and you'll see colors associated with that music. Mm-hmm. I do not have synesthesia. I wish I did, but when I hear this song, what I see in my head is a disco ball, and just a little, and it's at the center of a roller rink, and this song transports me to that roller rink and those spangly lights and the little disco ball going around and around. I find this song so joyful no matter how many times I hear it, which means I like this song. I have liked this song like 100,000 times because any time I go anywhere, this song is playing. And I never ever get tired of it. I'm just so impressed. You know, Lizzo came along, kind of had this slow rise. We mentioned TikTok. You know, she you know, was toiling in relative obscurity for years and years, finally breaks out, has this huge 2019, and then actually manages to duplicate that success with her follow-up record. And it's just been such a joy to see. I think she's just a delight. You know, she put out my favorite reality TV show this year, Watch Out for the Big Girls. Check it out if you haven't seen it. But this, you know, I love this song. This is I describe this song as a masterclass in my little write-up for it. It's just a masterclass in how to write a pop song in 2022.
And, you know, you mentioned TikTok there. You know, people learn the choreography for About Damn Time, you know, from TikTok. And how do you see Lizzo's trajectory and what she, you know, she gave us this year?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes Lizzo gets some guff from media types, not Steven, certainly, but
not me.
Other media types for being, you know, kind of self-helpy or focusing on what some critics think are rather banal kind of bromides about, you know, loving yourself, etc. But I mean, honestly, what the heck is wrong with that? You know, what is wrong with putting out positivity in the world, telling all kinds of people they should love themselves? As you said, like, her reality show is a lot about her. It's focused on her choosing dancers of all body types, you know, for her tour. So she's walking the walk as she sings the song and talks the talk. And that's what I love about Lizzo. You know, I love that she has a vision structured around this really important need in our culture to embrace diversity of all kinds. And, you know, I'll never get tired of that.
And there, too, again, is that theme of the passion for activism and the empowerment theme coming up and really perhaps changing what pop stardom looks like as, you know, as we go forward.
Yeah, yes, Kate, if you've got like another hour of programming, just turn me loose on the idea, on the criticisms of Lizzo for promoting too much positivity and self-affirmation. Like, all of a sudden, musicians have been singing about songs of self-affirmation for as long as there have been songs. The fact that all of a sudden it's a problem when it's a plus-size Black woman really makes me very angry.
I just
cleaned up my thoughts for public radio. There is nothing wrong with what Lizzo is doing. I will defend Lizzo to my grave, even though she is a fan of the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, we're going to switch gears here to Sudan Archives, Natra Brown, Prom Queen, NPR Music's pick for sixth best album of the year. And here's the lead single, Selfish Soul. So, Anne, you say Sudan Archives veers from R&B to rap. What sets her apart from others?
Well, it's been really a joy to watch Brittany Parks evolve over the past few years as she records under the name Sudan Archives. I think I first saw her at a music festival, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And she was interesting. She's a violinist. She's a classically trained violinist. And her early music was sort of like art, pop, R&B, and it was interesting, engaging, but not completely gelled together. And somehow along the road, she found how to connect all of these diverse interests and areas of inquiry in her music, the kind of indie element, the classical elements, her attraction to just classic sort of R&B and her rap style, and make something completely new. This record to me is just, it's like one long swagger, you know, it's just one long walk down the runway. And it's really thematically, it's kind of about that. It's about, so again, self-acceptance in a different way than Lizzo. It's, you know, it's racier and more, I don't want to say serious, like it just goes to different places than where Lizzo goes, but similar theme of like, I am me, I'm celebrating me, but I'm also celebrating my sensuality, my desire, honestly, to have sex and just be out there in the world and have fun and to claim all these different kinds of music. And she does that really well. She, one of the best shows I saw this year, too. She just she's on fire. She's so great live. I really recommend her.
Well, it, you know, in the interview she did with Aisha Roscoe, which was fabulous. And she's like, you know, my music is like electronic fiddle funk R&B. And I'm going like, what? So when you mix all that together, what happens?
Exactly. It's a little sideways, like the picture on the cover, but it works, you know.
It really works.
Stephen, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I had kind of the same response that Anne did. I really thought Sudan Archives was one thing. You know, I had seen her at the Tiny Desk, you know, and she sings and she plays
violin. Which was gorgeous. That's 2020 Tiny Desk.
It was the last Tiny Desk we recorded in the office before the pandemic. Which is a great way to go out. But this record is so like is so much more than that. It's really so like I come back to the idea of genre. It's very post genre. It's so assured and inventive and surprising and really just going down paths that she hadn't gone down on her records before. And so, yeah, this is really one of my very, very favorite records of the year. And it really reveals something different. Each time I listen to it, I have a different favorite song.
I love that. And I also like how, you know, she brings it all together as a multi-instrumentalist and can really use all these assets to figure out her sound, and that is distinct from other sounds, Anne.
Yeah, totally. And when she performs, she just performs with one other musician who is playing, you know, a bank of keyboards, like synthesizers. And yet she's got her violin and she, you know, she just fills that stage with sound and with her personality. And it's really impressive.
Talking about the best music of 2022 with NPR's Anne Powers and Stephen Thompson by our side. You can join in along the way, 800-642-1234. Okay, Stephen, in May, rap superstar Kendrick Lamar released his first album in 5 years, and the double album Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers was NPR Music's 20th best album of the year. So here is the single N95.
You out of pocket. Two ATMs, you stepping to what?
You out of pocket.
Who you think they talk about? Talk about us.
You out of pocket.
Who you think they carry up? Carry up us.
The world in a panic, the women is stranded, the men on the run. The profits abandoned, the law take advantage, the market is crashing, the industry wants
Used to sleep in the box while they making a mockery following us. This ain't Monopoly, watching for love. This ain't monogamy, y'all get jumping on what the hell is that. I gotta relax when I...
So how does Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers compare to Kendrick Lamar's previous works?
Well, it is a bigger, thornier record. You know, Kendrick Lamar had a couple of records that were basically, several records that were, almost all of his records were basically universally acclaimed. You know, his album Damn won a Pulitzer Prize, which is about as acclaimed as you can get. And listen to this record. It is, you know, like several of the records we've been talking about, it's a supersized record. It's basically a double album at 70 plus minutes. And it, he is never on autopilot on this record. This is a dark and combative, confrontational record. It is not an easy listen, and so he probably shed some followers with this record, but he did that by going as deep as he possibly could. And I think there are missteps along the way. There are tracks on this record that really don't work, but he is always, for 70 plus minutes, he is pulling you in closer and forcing you to confront what he's saying. And so this record is a very, very, very big swing. When it hits very hard.
What do you make of the song Auntie Diaries to, you know, describe his learning to embrace the gender transitions of some relatives, the pushback from the LGBTQ communities?
Yeah, I think that song's a misstep. I'm certainly he has earned some benefit of the doubt that his heart is in the right place. But he does a fair bit of misgendering in that song. He kind of centers his own experiences instead of the experiences of the people that he's rapping about. For me, that song is a miss, but I do think it signifies at least how willing he is to wade into extremely thorny territory when it would have been easy for him to coast on the kind of, you know, universal appeal of some of his previous work.
And do you have any Kendrick Lamar notes you want to share?
I just say, when you're thinking about an artist like Kendrick Lamar, you have to think about someone like Bob Dylan, right? And the different transitions and phases that great artist, who also has won big fancy prizes, has gone through. You know, and to me, this is sort of like Kendrick's Blonde on Blonde or something. You know, it goes so many different places, and it is very internal. It's also, you know, is adventurous in terms of its approach to what he does. And as Stephen said, the through line is always his flow, you know, and he's just unrivaled as a rapper. You know, he's unrivaled in the way he uses language and the way he the tone of his voice and his flow in general hits. It's nobody is like him. So yeah, even though maybe this isn't the one that's going to be pulled out as his masterwork, I think there will be a time when people see it as his masterwork. Some people, you know, because a great artist, there's a little bit of masterwork dust on everything they do.
I love that. NPR Music's Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson are touring us through the music of 2022, and they mine for music and follow all corners of the industry all year long. Still time to talk about the songs and artists that changed you this year. What you loved, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's take a moment to reflect and celebrate the year in music with NPR Music by our side. Join in, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have NPR Music's Ann Powers and Stephen Thompson. They stay with us. You know, we started this conversation about what the year in music signified, and I just want to add mine that, you know, sometimes artists get their moment, their standing ovation decades later after their initial impact. And I was reflecting on Kate Bush this year, as you know, I'm a child of the 70s, and running up that hill was so emotional to me when I heard it like everywhere, whether it was in the grocery store or like getting my hair cut. And I think it was because of the passage of time in my life and being able to just hear a great song and a great artist. What came up for you, Anne, with Kate Bush?
Well, I mean, Kate Bush is my ultimate my ultimate artist. I like you, grew up with her. In fact, perhaps I'll share the link with you. You can share it with your listeners. I wrote a personal essay about how Kate Bush basically was the artist who held my hand as I went into adulthood through her album, like The Dreaming, my favorite Kate Bush album. So for me, there's always mixed emotions, honestly, when your favorite artist who you've held so close to your heart, who wasn't a mass phenomenon, and Kate Bush was never a mass phenomenon mm-hmm. in the U.S. until this past year, when she finds that bigger audience, you know, it's sometimes hard to share. But of course, ultimately, I'm delighted that her legacy is being explored by younger generations and that her music is being heard as so relevant today. And most of all, I hope she gives us more music, because she now rarely records. Every one of her records, including the later ones, has touched me deeply. But I do think Running Up That Hill is a great introduction. But listeners, there's so much more. Just spend some time.
Well, let's take a call now. Allison in Racine. Allison, what music came up for you?
Hi. We went to see Ziggy Marley perform this summer, and he was doing a tribute to his father, so it was incredible music. But what was most moving is we saw him perform at Ravinia, which is in Highland Park, Illinois. And so that music kind of in that place was... It was very moving and incredible, and, I mean, you can't beat Ziggy Marley performing his dad's music anywhere, anytime.
Oh, Allison, well, thank you. Yeah, and
that brings up something, which is that for a lot of people this year, although we're still in a pandemic, we still are dealing with all kinds of health matters in our culture. But this was a year when many people returned to live music, and Ravinia is such a beautiful setting to see music. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, going back to shows, going to festivals, and venues coming back to life and sometimes changing their approaches is a big part of the story of 2022.
Stephen, what comes up for you with these live performances?
Well, rediscovering the experience of gathering with people to celebrate music. I think like Anne, I'm very pandemic shy and crowd averse even before the pandemic. But having that communal experience, there's really nothing like it.
Mm. And one of your favorite albums of the year is Portland-based folk singer-songwriter Anna Tipple, and the album is called Outsiders. Here is the record's title track.
Outsiders, look out. It turns out we are not so different.
How has the record affected you?
I love Anna Tivel so much. She's an incredible songwriter. She's released several albums. For me, this one really brought all of her many talents together. Just the detail of her songs. This album is centered around the theme of outsiders and, you know, marginalized people, self-marginalized people, people who maybe have, you know, lived a self-destructive life for a while and they're trying to figure out how to get out of it. But one thing about this record that's amazing is that Anna combines her kind of John Prine-esque skill at telling others people's stories with her Joni Mitchell-esque skill of telling her own story. And the fact that it goes back and forth from sort of confessional songs to poetic songs to these incredible character studies really impresses me. And also working with the producer Shane Leonard, she has created this wonderful atmosphere for her songs. It's spare, but it's adventurous. And with that beautiful voice, as I called it, the voice of a wobbly angel at the center of the songs. I really recommend this record for anyone who likes stories, who likes, you know, folk music. It's just a wonderful listen.
Oh, thank you for those words. We are almost out of time, but Stephen, what release are you most excited for next year?
Oh my gosh, where do I begin? People ask, what's the best year for music? I will always say next year. I'm excited to hear Rihanna. We've been promised a new Rihanna record for how many years, and it looks like we're going to finally get one in 2023, given that she's performing at the Super Bowl. And I want to throw out a quick word on behalf of SZA, who put out a record on December 9th that came out after we put out our year-end lists. I managed to slip my list in late and got to put it in my personal top 10. That record's another just like epic, phenomenal record that we're going to be playing all year long.
Oh my goodness. And we are out of time. But Anne and Stephen, oh my gosh, this is a blast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Always really fun.
Anne Powers is a critic and correspondent at NPR Music. Stephen Thompson, a host, writer, and reviewer at NPR Music, co-creator of NPR Music's Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.